tonight. We do have Senator Jacobson
in the flesh. He's here.
In studio.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Oh, and he brought us Christmas cookies. How sweet.
Are these your wife's Christmas cookies?
These are my wife's Christmas cookies.
It don't get any better than that, Jack.
Those are pretty good. I've got the scars to show that you don't want to touch those before those have all been distributed first.
I see.
So, but no, Julie, this is one of her traditions at Christmas time. So I've got board meetings today at the bank, and so they get a December board meeting. Everybody enjoys that because they've got nonstop cookies and the staff and all the branches, and so
Is that her caramels?
That's one of the caramels.
Oh, that's my favorite. I remember those from previous Christmas.
Those are kind of like crack. I guess you just get hit. So, but
10 of 10 live taste testing on the show.
Bless your heart, Julie.
Thank you very much.
She's an amazing cook and baker. Her mother and grandmother were good cooks and bakers, and daughter Mary took on the same trend, and so she is a great cook herself. So, but yeah, so at any rate, sorry I'm late. I don't know what the deal was. I lost track of time. I looked at my watch and it was 8 o'clock, and I thought, let me see. I think it's going to take more than 6 minutes to get to the studio.
But you're here.
But
that's
I'm
good.
Here. So anyhow.
What are we going to cover today?
Well, first of all, I just kind of amazed with our volleyball team. I felt bad for them. I mean, they almost swept Penn State. I mean, they came within, I mean, how many match points did they have?
At least two
in the third set. Mm-hmm. And if one of those balls would have dropped, they would have swept Penn State. And I'm convinced with the one player out for Louisville. Louisville had a tremendous home field advantage, but our home court advantage. But I'm convinced we'd have won it all if we could have just got past Penn State on that third set. But then I thought, well, once we've won the first two, I thought, there's no way they're going to reverse sweep us,
mm-hmm.
and they did.
Mm-hmm.
But Penn State's a good team. My understanding is that their coach, who's fighting cancer, mm-hmm. first female volleyball coach to win a national championship, and of course Danny Busboom would have, former Nebraska player and Nebraska coach, and would love to have seen that honor go to her, but if we're not going to get it. So,
right.
Anyway.
Once it went to the fifth set, I was not feeling good.
I was not feeling good. They were on a roll, and we were getting disjointed, and I knew we were in trouble when we saw Harper Murray hit the ball in the air for someone to whack it over the net, and nobody hit it. It just dropped to the floor, and I thought, mm-hmm. girls, you've lost your focus here.
Okay? Somehow, yeah.
So we've really lost our focus. But tremendous season and great athletes, but I'm telling you, great ambassadors for Nebraska. I mean, I'm proud of every one of those players, and they represented us well. And as you watch some of the other teams, some of the cockiness and things that went on, our girls just seem to be composed when it came and controlled themselves. They've been there before, and they really handled themselves very, very well. But I'd also just point out Harper Murray. Boy, you look at the determination in her to win. I mean, just look at her face when she was even in those late sets, and she was not going to let us lose. I mean, she was absolutely on fire the entire tournament. I mean, she's an incredible player. So
they'll be playing with a chip on their shoulder next year to get
back.
Yeah,
they will. Yes,
what year is Harper?
Sophomore, right?
She's a sophomore. Yeah, she's a sophomore. We've got a lot of young, long players.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Well,
Coach Cook has done a great job in building depth in that program. So he knows pretty much where he stands already for next year. And
well, it's a little bit like you're finding with the football team. You know, today you've got players that he recruits outstanding athletes, but if you're an outstanding athlete, you also want to play.
Yeah.
And so he rotates on a very regular basis. Everybody gets playing time. And it's almost like when you're auditioning for starting next week or mm-hmm. the next game.
Yeah.
And so if you look at not only volleyball girls, when we've had occasionally transfers and transfer portal, but we see the same thing in football. You know, if you don't get playing time and you're a pretty good athlete, then you're going to go see if you can get playing time somewhere else. And now this transfer portal thing, of course, is out of control.
Yep.
I mean,
they've got to rein that in. There was a story last week about, trying to remember where it was, but the kid that went was guaranteed $7 million in NIL. That shouldn't be at the college level doing that.
Well, and furthermore, there should be no offers. If you go in the transfer portal, you ought to be out there on your own. Now, the problem is, how do you control it? How do you keep the surrogates and others going and whispering in the ear of this player that, hey, I know there's this available too if you get in the portal.
Right.
And, of course, once you declare to go in the portal, you can always come back out. So it's just an audition.
Nebraska had a couple of players do that.
Yeah, they did. They did. And and part of that might be that we up the ante. But it's just anymore. They said that, Ohio State's a $20 million team. Well, I think that'll be a drop in the bucket 2-3 years from now if they don't do anything more.
Yep.
And they're still the lawsuit that's going to get implemented now this next year, where every team's going to have to pay a certain amount to all their players. And I think that's going to cost the university, well, the athletic fund, I think about $20 million a year just to do that.
Yeah.
And so it's just gotten completely out of control. In a lot of ways, it'll bring parity to, if you've got a team like Nebraska and they can come up with enough money, they can buy a team. Look what Indiana did. At any rate, I don't think it's good for college, but it's here, and so we'll have to deal with it.
Speaking of legislation, I wanted to get your thoughts. Is Governor Pillen pretty shaken up, huh?
Yeah, I did send him a text last night, and he's and I also talked to Dave Lopez, and his chief of staff, and so I asked Dave. I said, my understanding is that he got pretty banged up, but he's going to be fine. And Dave said, yeah, that's essentially it. He said, I don't want to underplay this. He said he got banged up pretty good. He said that's pretty serious fall.
Broken bones or?
Didn't say broken bones, but I think it just, I mean, it was a pretty serious fall. I think appropriately so, I think they transferred him to the Med Center just so you've got all of the specialties available. So he's the governor. You probably better be not taking any chances. And so it really wasn't a hit to the Columbus Hospital. It's a very good hospital up there, but they wouldn't have the resources that the Med Center would.
That answered a question I had. I'd heard he'd fell, but I didn't know where, so he must have been at his farm.
Well, I think the family was out riding horses, and he was riding on a new horse that evidently hadn't been broke in very long or ridden much, and that's why he got thrown, because he's a pretty good horseman and really enjoys riding horses. And I can tell you that, you know, in the job that he's in, you need to, when you have downtime, you need to take advantage of it and just clear your head. This isn't going to be fun, and the timing is bad. The legislative session starts on the 8th of January. Now, this is the 90-day session, so you're sitting there saying, well, gosh, 90 days, you're going to start the 8th of January, so what, sometime in April it'll be done. And it's like, no, our last day is June 18th. And it's like, wait a minute, 90 days, what kind of, is that new math or what? So the speaker, I would say most senators and certainly all the lobbyists are not very happy about the schedule, but there's a lot of 3-day weeks and 4-day weeks, so we'd either have Monday off, or in some cases we got Monday and Friday off. And I think what the speaker was trying to do is for the bill drafters, in the special session it really got ugly, because you've got a limited amount of time you're there, and then you start making amendments to bills. And what the bill drafters have to do is they have to go out and make changes to those bills. But when you take this section of law and combine it with this section of law, now you've got to understand and research and make sure, does this impact other sections of law that have to be updated as well? So there'll be an amendment offered on the floor, and if that amendment gets adopted into the main bill, then it's got to go to ENR, and they go in and which is the bill drafters, and they're going to go modify it, and they've got to do a lot of research with it. And then we have this catch-22. We took this up at the exec board meeting that, you know, do we need to hire another attorney or two to work in the bill drafting office? Well, you know, bill drafters are slammed during the legislative session, and then after it's over, they've got to wrap up everything and get it put into statutes, and so they're busy there. But, you know, they're probably 6 months out of the year when they're fully employed, and then there's periods of time when they're not. It's the same thing, really, with your LAs and your committee counsel. You know, they're there year round. Their jobs are they've always got something to do, largely because in session it goes without saying you're busy, and then out of session you're probably working on new bills and doing some other work, but the load is lighter. So we really don't want to be overstaffed in the bill drafters, but at the same time we don't want to hold up the session because we're ready to come back the next day, the bill's been scheduled, and we really can't take it up because we don't have the final draft because it's still with bill drafters. And
is the bill drafters like a pool of people?
Yes.
Doing that every
yes.
senator can use?
Well, what happens is there's a head of the department of the division. And so when you submit a bill to be drafted, like right now, it'll be assigned to someone in the bill drafting office. And so then they'll be working with you and your staff on getting the bill drafted correctly and then get it to you. And then they do what we call three-part. So when you three-part a bill, you make three copies of it. You sign as a senator all three drafts or all three copies, and then you submit them to the clerk of the legislature when the legislature's in session, and then they take it. The bill gets read across, meaning that the president, when there's a break in the session, will read across the bills that have been introduced that day. Or as we get to the end of the session, the last thing you're going to do is read across any bills that have been introduced that day. So you'll see that in the first 10 days of the session, you'll see a lot of that where they'll be reading across bills. And so when those bills get read across, then they become public. And so generally that next day, you're going to hear from lobbyists who don't like your bill. And they're going to tell you why they don't like your bill. And you're going to hear from about how strongly people don't like your bill.
Yeah. People that are not your constituents for the most part.
That's right.
If it's lobbyists talking, it's not your people.
It's not my people. Yeah. So, yeah, I look at lobbyists in a little bit different way than some do. But lobbyists can provide you with a lot of information. Okay. They'll come to you. I know different times there have been insurance bills. I introduced a bill last year, had a lobbyist come to me last day of bill introduction. They had the bill three-parted. It was a bill for the Dental Association, okay? And, excuse me, they wanted a bill for in dental insurance, and they wanted to see the payout ratio versus the premiums to be significantly higher and put in statute that they're required to have that certain payout ratio if they're going to sell dental insurance in Nebraska. And lobbyists told me that, look, would you at least introduce the bill for us? You don't have to prioritize it. You don't have to work it. We'll take care of working the bill. Would you just introduce it for us so we can get it out there? And it's a lobbying firm that I have a lot of respect for. And so I went ahead and a lot of senators were already filled up on bills. And so I introduced the bill. So read it across. Next morning, I got Robert Bell in my office, and he's the head of the Insurance Federation. And I really like Robert because he's a very straight shooter. You know, he comes in and says, "Oh my gosh, I see you introduced that bill." And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I really wish you hadn't done that, but let me just tell you why it's a bad bill." And so he went down through all of his points of why he didn't like it. And he said, "Would you be willing to meet with the insurers?" And so I said, "Yeah, I'd like to know everything I can about the subject matter." So he brought in the biggest dental insurer around, and they came in and we talked, and they showed me the math and said that payout ratio will mean that we won't be selling any dental insurance in Nebraska because we just can't. Our overhead, the volume of dental insurance that's written in Nebraska, or, you know, and most anywhere, the volume of dental insurance versus health insurance, we can't cover our overhead and have that kind of payout ratio. So I said, "Okay, I get it," and I made no commitments to work the bill, and so I didn't. And so then this year I'm being asked again to carry the bill, and I said, "Nope, I'm out. You're going to need to find somebody else to introduce the bill." I said, "It'll come through Banking, Commerce, and Insurance, which I intend to chair this next biennium." And you know, I said, "I'll schedule it, and if you can get the votes, I'll let it move to the floor." But I said, I won't be carrying it myself. And so that was some good information. And of course, the other side really couldn't bring me numbers that could support what they were asking for. Mm-hmm. And so that's really why I did not work it. And, you know, I've had the same thing with ESRD, end-stage renal disease. That was something that I stripped out of the Medigap bill that I got passed a year ago. They were very upset about it. And we just walked through the numbers, and it was one of those situations where the lobbyist is looking at me saying, "We need to include this." And I said, "Well, I don't disagree that we need to find coverage for people under age 65 that have ESRD, because it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. Dialysis is very expensive. But for that very reason, what you're doing is you're saddling those insurers with we're not insuring risk at this point because nobody will take the policy until they have ESRD. So then you know you're going to start paying out right on day one." And I said, "Let me ask you this. What's your cost? What's your client's cost to do one dialysis treatment?" "Now, about $330. "Okay, and you're doing three a week?" "Yeah." "Okay, so let's just call it $1,000 a week, $4,000 a month." "Okay, and the premium for Medigap, about $275 a month." "How does that math work?"
So they're at a fifth of what they right need right from the get-go.
And of course, the punchline of this is, well, that loss gets passed into the total cost, so then anyone who has a Medigap policy now is subsidizing the ESRD. And I said, I think rather than forcing this higher premium, because the one thing I've learned about seniors is $25 a month is real money, okay? Mm-hmm. $50 a month is real money. So to add incrementally more cost to their premiums could cause them to have to drop their insurance. I said, I would rather we figure out a better way through the risk pool that's out there to be able to fund that, and that we get funded through the state as opposed to being funded through the patients that are, and the individuals who are already paying insurance on the other side. The other thing I would just tell you that this has kind of been interesting. I've been getting stalked here lately by that same bill I included in LB 853, which was dealing with durable medical equipment. So, you know, I'd give you an example here that Great Plains Medical Equipment has durable right medical equipment. It's scooters, it's, you know, wheelchairs, any of that stuff.
Elevating chairs, yeah, what all that.
So there's a store in Omaha that advertises a lot, and I don't want to give you their name, but they sell scooters, and their name is pretty much got scooter in the name and store on the backside of it.
Okay? Right.
And So the owner of that, they weren't paying attention when we passed this, but they were the bad actor that we were going after. Because what they were doing, there was a loophole in the Medicare coverage.
It was the way they were charging.
Yeah, because what it would allow them to do under the current law before we made the change was that they could, number one, balance bill, meaning they could submit a claim to Medicare for whatever the Medicare would pay. And then if they were charging more, then they could go to the person who got the scooter and balance bill, meaning go back and make them pay the difference. Well, you're not allowed to do that if you're in network with Medicare. So they're out of network so that they can do this. The other thing, the most egregious thing, was like with your insurers. The insurers who had Medigap policies, in particular, they would end up charging them, say it's $20,000 for a motorized chair. They would mark it up to, you know, $60,000. Mm. And the insurer had no choice but to pay it. Because they had agreed to pay under the Medicare program. So that was a real problem. And they had found cases, documented cases, where there were 800% markups. And yes, it was coming from primarily one store. There, so I never got one call from any other durable medical equipment provider. There were a couple of them that had issues. They worked with the insurers. And we made some modifications to the bill. But this particular company never showed up for any of the hearings, never testified. They got excited the first time Blue Cross Blue Shield denied their claim and only paid them what was allowed. And then they just went off. So they've called my office and used some colorful language talking to Christina. They've done some just interesting things. They were pretending to be someone else when they called me, saying they were a constituent, and then I find out they're not. And so I had another encounter with this guy last week. He was he'd been calling other senators to get them to put pressure on my office. I said, so what do you want? You want a bill? Should I introduce a bill to say that we want to allow these bad actors to go back to taking advantage of senior citizens who are using some kind of durable medical equipment and insurance companies. Is that what you want me to do? And you're not, oh, by the way, you're not in my district either. So let me just give you a little piece of advice. That's not gonna happen, okay? That's just not gonna happen, so.
Other than wasting time in the Senate, it might be a good idea just to bring that bill with the right names and just throw it out there and embarrass the guy.
I don't think this guy can be embarrassed. I really don't. But it's been interesting. So, but at any rate, the session's close again, January 8th, and I'm still putting the finishing touches on some bills. I'll probably speak a little bit to those next week. But I won't be bringing a big batch of bills. I think as a committee chair, you're going to be pretty busy really working the committee. But I like to try to bring impactful bills that will make a difference for the constituents here, and that's kind of been my focus from the beginning, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Very well,
fantastic. Well, anything else from legislation you'd like to touch on with our listeners?
I think that's it. I do want to wish everyone a very Merry Christmas. It's my favorite holiday of the year. I said in my article this week, I reminisce just briefly about growing up as a kid, and I think I've told the story before. Big family, rented farm. I mean, we were dirt poor. And yet, somehow, Mom and Dad figured out a way to make Christmas very special for us. And now I would tell you that we all got several packages under the tree. Now, this one had underwear in it, and this one had socks in it. But then we also got a toy of some kind. So it was a good opportunity to catch up on the regular shopping. But I just have a lot of really fond memories. And I think part of Christmas is it brings family closer together, even more so than Thanksgiving. Christmas is for those that are holiday churchgoers, the churches are full, and that's good to see. And people remember why we celebrate Christmas, and it's a great reminder for people. and it's a great way to get with family and friends and enjoy things and share gifts with your friends. And so enjoy your cookies.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Will you be spending December 25th in North Platte?
No, we're going to be in Lincoln over the Christmas. Both the kids are there, and they've got in-laws to go get with too, but they're gonna spend it with us. But we agreed to do it in Lincoln, so it'll be weird celebrating Christmas in Lincoln, but it's still Christmas. It'll still be special.
You're still with the family. That's all that matters, right?
That's right. That's all that matters.
All right. Well, Senator, yes, wish you a very Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you next week. Safe travels to Lincoln.
Thank you. Sorry I was late.